What are you going to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
Another edition of Meet Me at Mutual, maybe the last Meet Me at Mutual with the team in the current configuration, maybe not, who knows, the trade deadline is coming, but we don't know exactly what that's going to mean for the Cardinals. We'll get into that soon, but right now I'm your host Daniel Shoptoff from C70 at the Bat. You'll follow me on Twitter at C70, and with me is my regular co-host Alan Medlock, A Medlock 1 on Twitter. The Redbird Daily is where he is writing, and we're going to actually try to follow our format this week. I think, hadn't done that in a while, but we're going to see about trying to do that, and so we'll jump right into the Redbird Rewind.
He's got it! Struck him out! Look at the scene on the field. McCarver, the first one. Now his infielders all over him. A new world's record of 17 strikeouts in one game.
All right, since we spoke last week, last week we were just coming off that, late inning loss, and you say, which late inning loss? Because that seems to be the theme for this week. But that was the first one against the Pirates. Cardinals win on Saturday there. They lose the, another heartbreaker on Sunday. They wind up splitting with the Mets on a game, especially on Thursday, that had just some really bad endings. And then they go into Chicago today, and I hate to say the Chicago Cubs gave them that game, but in some degree they kind of did. We'll get to that in a little bit. Let's just talk a little bit, though, Alan, about that Pittsburgh series, first of all. That series, and we talked about it some last week, some beforehand, this whole week was big for the Cardinals, and I'm not sure it's kind of the standard story of the 2017 Cardinals. They did just enough to be interesting, not enough to really solve anything. They easily could have swept Pittsburgh, and now Pittsburgh's a team that's ahead of them in the standings.
Yeah, and winning tonight. I was excited today. It's easy to be excited after a win like today, where it kind of gets handed to you. You could probably kind of build a little bit of momentum off of it, which they have a problem doing. But, I'm just thinking, okay, well, Milwaukee gets beat. Chicago gets beat, of course. And all we need is Colorado to play well, and then you gain ground on everybody. Well, Pittsburgh's winning again. So they're kind of worried. I'm kind of concerned about Pittsburgh that with Marte coming back, that they're not really hitting stride. So that kind of concerns me. My outlook on the second half, just like we talked about last week, was these first three series out, I felt like you needed to win, that you had to win two of them. You needed to win all three of them. So after those losses, I was like, okay, well, when you win the two, I thought that DeGrom would probably beat them at home, but I really thought you had to win Thursday, which you didn't. So I was really down, especially in the manner that it happened. Well, when you look at it and you're thinking, they're going to do this to us all year. It's not like they really got outplayed most of the time. They just blew it in the back end of games, almost every one of those losses. And you're thinking, well, that could probably be a pretty quick fix if they went outside of the organization to do it. Or if you start, restructuring this a little bit, you could probably get some, you could probably be effective out there. And that would give you a little bit more hope. Now I'm kind of placating myself, probably. I don't know. But I felt like you needed to win those two games. Almost felt like you, or those two series, felt like you had to. So I really don't know what else to say as far as, outlook. I know we'll get into this a little bit more. I like the roster restructuring. Kind of feels like the one that they're going to roll with. I have a couple of issues with some of them. So hope you can finish this off. And then you got the big homestand before the deadline. My outlook now is I ride the fence so hard on in the fact that I could see something big happening like they could do a a roster shakeup completely and make a move, or that this is kind of their way of not necessarily throwing in the towel, but a way of saying, hey, you don't deserve help at the deadline. You got to do it yourself, type situation. So it's going to be an interesting week.
Yeah, no doubt. And you're right. I mean, that the series in New York, it did give, so the first two games, I was doing a write-up to them today, and, the offense was good, not great. They scored 6 runs in the first game, but they did all in one inning. Scored 5 against, like the Walker game, which we'll have to get into to Michael Walker because I think that's an interesting discussion. But, it was a game where Matt Carpenter had 4 hits and, like, nobody else had more than one, kind of spread out in just an interesting way. Mike Leake just gets lit up, which, again, you're right, Jacob DeGrom was probably going to win. But, a good game out of Leak. The Cardinals wound up getting the tying run to the plate
in the
7th inning, in a game that they were down 7-0 after 2 innings. So, a better start out of Leak, who knows what happens there. And then Thursday where they, they battled so hard. I mean, they really did. They got down, they come back, get back tied, came back, took the lead, really deserved better. And those late inning games are just so tough to see. And, we've seen, and it's not like Matheny's running out so on O all the time. I mean, O had that first loss at the Pittsburgh, but we hadn't really seen much of him since then, and definitely not in key situations. We saw him pitch today when the Cardinals were up 8 or whatever they were up. So it's not that. I mean, he ran out Brett Cecil in Sunday's game, and he ran out Brett Cecil in Thursday's game. And Brett Cecil had what, like 16 scoreless outings or something before those two games? He even had one in the middle, but it just, it just blew up. I mean, it just went wrong. And it's almost like right now, no matter what they try to do late innings, if it's a close game, it's going to backfire on them.
Oh, I agree. And it's funny, it's one of those you can't really complain. I can't, because that's the exact combination that I've wanted for them to use, and it just didn't work. So, there's a part of me that wants to say, okay, well, that's proof enough to show that, is Hudson ready, for some late innings? Is Alcantara ready for some late innings? Or you're going to go get an Addison Reed? Or you're going to go get somebody? I mean, that's one of those you can get a rental you'd almost expect. Rentals in the back of a bullpen don't bother me because, I think that's such a fragile, that job fluctuates year to year. So, from good to bad, we see that with O, we've seen it with Rosenthal, every odd year, basically, or every other year. Yeah. So, I could see that, but that, to me, would seem like that could be an easier fix, and I still think that they'll probably get somebody, but it's still frustrating, because those are just the ones that just, that just basically cut your heart out, because we had the Friday and the Sunday that ended like that, and then, of course, you have the DeGrom game where you kind of felt like a Scherzer type lead, and then of course you blow the one yesterday, and the fashion that they blew it was worse than just getting knocked around. You're thinking that Rosenthal would be so glad to feel like he got out of that inning, and it's just a brain lapse that he didn't cover, and it's and as much contact as he gave up that inning, it should have been easier for him to score than just not covering the bag. So he should have been very fortunate that he had a way to get out of the inning and should have gotten over there, which, leads us to other stories, but, just frustrating, but you're right. Those are the combination combinations that everybody wanted to see him use, and it just didn't work.
Yeah, and I mean, it is frustrating because you look at this and you see where this division stands right now, and if you win 2 of those games, I mean, let's not even talk about last Friday because, they scored 2 runs in the first inning and didn't score again, so it almost seemed like a matter of time, but you win the game on Sunday that you're leading in the 8th. You win the game on Thursday that you're leading in the 8th. Right now, you're, a game and a half out of first place. Remarkable at all. And you're at 500, which is amazing, too, right there.
Mm-hmm.
It's remarkable right now that the Cardinals are 3.5 out. I mean, that's just, it's crazy to think. And you're right. If Pittsburgh wins tonight, they're 2 games out. The Cubs are right now sitting at 1. This whole division in a week could be significantly different, but it's still so hard. And like I said, we'll kind of get into that a little bit more. You're still trying to figure out what this team is and what this team should do is difficult. You get a game like today, though, and I don't care how bad the season is. I don't care how bad things are going. When you can score 9 runs on the Cubs before anybody gets out in an inning, that's like a highlight of the game, of the year right there. I mean, that was just amazing. I didn't even watch the first 7 innings of this game. I was doing other things, kind of kept an eye on, knew generally what was going on. And then I come in and I turn on the TV and they don't get out. I mean, and the Cubs just, you know, walking batters, you know, throwing the ball everywhere, even pitches that weren't wild, really wild, didn't get recorded as wild pitches because, you know, they'd hit the backstop. And I mean, it was just complete meltdown. Usually it's more like, you know, even the Cardinals don't do that badly.
No, and it was funny that I thought I was worried about today's game. Of course, you give up the 2 runs early, and you're just like, okay, listen, this is one of those to where an ace needs to come out and shut these guys down. So they give up the 2 runs, and then the Cards come back and score the 2 runs. And at that point, Martinez had really locked in. You know, they were having trouble. He was hitting a ton of ground balls. Well, you know, one goes through to Young, and of course that run scores. And you're thinking, okay, you knew that was going to happen to them. That's 2017 to a T. The one mistake, they're going to lose 3-2. It's going to be really bad when they lose 3-2 after they get out of this bases-loaded jam in the 8th. I kept thinking that was what was going to happen. I was like, you know what, it's just how it's going to go.
Oh, yeah.
And then the wheels fell off for Chicago. And it was so funny to have to see Madden make the trip so many times because he was so frustrated. There's not many players I dislike more than Contreras for, you know, the catcher for the Cubs. And we'll catch for Chicago. And I will say this. There was a part of me tonight, this afternoon, that felt bad for him because he was working his tail off to get, because there was probably 4 or 5 balls that he had to catch and it were not easy catches that should have gone to the backstop. And he saved them more runs. They were everywhere. I've never seen him like that. And that gives me a little bit of hope for the weekend because I never thought their bullpen was that good. Now, Davis, I'm real high on Wade Davis. But I was always convinced that those guys just pitched above their talent level against the Cardinals. So when this happened today, I was like, you know, there's a little bit of hope here that this series could kind of swing back the Cards' way because they're hurting. I'm not so sure the Cubs are as good as we thought they were.
Well, and again, it's kind of that thing we've talked about. You know, the Cubs come out of the break, and they have the Orioles, and they had the Braves, which are not good teams. I mean, the Cardinals went in and beat around on the Orioles, too. They didn't win all the games, but they scored a lot of runs out there. That's the last time Stephen Piscotty hit a home run.
that's as much. Now I'm not going to go there.
It's a month later, so, you know. And, you know, the Braves are the Braves, and even though the Braves have played better this year, it's not surprising. So the Cubs go and they win, have a 6-0 road trip. Well, that's very similar, at least in idea, to the 7-0 road trip the Cardinals had back in May. You know, they went to Atlanta and they went to Miami and they ran them through, and they're 7-0 and they're first place and everything's great. And then they went like 3-13 when they hit the thing. So to come out and prick that confidence bubble a little bit is not a bad thing. And if you can take one of the next two, I'd really like to see them take both, but if you can take one of the next two, I think you do put a little bit more doubt in their minds of you know, are we that good, or did we just run into some weak teams? Now, I gotta say, I'm pulling up the box score here and looking at it, and I don't know a time when I've ever seen two pitchers back to back have 0.0 innings pitched. I mean, occasionally you get that because you get the left-handed specialist that comes in and doesn't get his guy out. You might have it happen a couple times in a game, rarely, but they're not ever facing more than like one batter. You know, Carl Edwards Jr. faced 3 batters. He gave up 2 walks and a hit. Loaded the bases with nobody out. They go in, they get Rondon. You know, he gives up 2 walks and 2 hits. You know, walks Jerko with the bases, because that's the thing. You're right. The bases were loaded, nobody out, and everybody on Twitter is like, how are they going to get out of this without scoring? Because that's, that's just the way it was. It's like, is it the double play? Is it the 1-2-3 double play? Is it a strikeout, then a double play? You know, what's it going to be? Is it going to be a pop-up? And then, you know, who knows? But, you know, then they walk Jerko, and it's like, well, they've tied it. And then, you know, the things, I mean, and there were a couple balls. You know, DeJong could have, you know, another foot. He has a home run. He has a grand slam. You know, I don't think it was even a foot for Kelly that he could have had a grand slam. You know,
it was,
I don't know, it was the most fun we've had at the ballpark in a long time.
Yeah, I needed it. I mean, that's, it's funny, it is funny how Mozeliak can push some buttons. And it's, I mean, it's not like it was his fault that the Cubs completely imploded that inning. Mm-hmm. But isn't it weird how when he does do a shakeup, they seem like a different team? Yeah, it's funny, in the Redbird Daily, the in our DM list, the minute that I saw that Grichuk was called up, I put it out there. I said, Grichuk homers today. And I just said that in there. And the reason I say that is he always homers in one of the series in Chicago. And he always plays well the minute he comes back. Well, I got lucky on the roll of the dice on that. But you're just like, it just seems like they push the right buttons whenever they make these shakeups. They never last, of course. But it's just interesting how it works, because I was thinking, okay, kind of maybe stick a nail in them for 2017 if they lose this one 3-2 and have these chances to go. And, well, you know, lo and behold, the Cubs kept them in it and may have kept them in it for the long run.
Well, and that may be a real good place to transition then into our main segment, Up the Middle.
Alisaev, the second for one, the double play. What a double play by Ozzie Smith.
And in this segment, besides the talk about what the Cardinals are going to do, what they should do, and what they can do, let's get into what they have done. They did a lot today. They promoted Randall Grichuk, got him back off his DL, as we talked about. We saw the return, well, the first time to come up this year. Of Carson Kelly, and we saw Zach Duke, who, you know, is less than 9 months, I think, or maybe right around 9-10 months away from a Tommy John surgery. We see him back in the big leagues. And to flip side of that, they designate Eric Fryer for assignment. They send down Sam Tuilavala, and they send down Magniri Sierra. And then the Cardinals then go and trade Marco Gonzalez to the Seattle Mariners for Tyler O'Neill, a right fielder, very highly regarded prospect, who's sitting about second in the Mariners organization. I think somebody has slid O'Neill about fourth in the Cardinal organization now that he's been traded. Let's talk about the roster moves first, though. And we'll start with Grichuk. Like you said, he does do well when he comes up. But I gotta say, I've been on Cardinal Twitter tends to, I think, somewhat think of Randall Grichuk as the boogeyman, that he's going to come and he's going to take all this playing time, and it's you know, a terrible thing, and Tommy Pham is going to be unjustly benched and all this kind of stuff. And I mean. I get why they do that, because Grichuk at times has had this, but I don't feel like the last time he was up that he played a whole lot, and I'm pretty sure you can't move Tommy Pham out of the lineup for any length of time without a crowbar right now. I mean, that's just the way, I mean, even Mike Matheny's not doing that. But, you know, Grichuk only had like one game at Springfield in his rehab assignment before he gets called up. That seems overly aggressive to me for the way this team is looking. I mean, do you think there's something more to that? Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I would think so. I do. And that's, I was, like today, I had completely prepared myself for Grichuk coming back this weekend. Whenever they said that he'll be ready for the Chicago series, I thought that it was truly a rehab. It wasn't like he went down the last time. I thought he was coming back. That one didn't surprise me as much. And like I said, I'm a Grichuk over Piscotty guy. And maybe that'll change eventually. So you'd probably hear me complain more about Scotty if he was coming back to get the playing time, to get just set in, get all the at-bats. Grichuk, I think you can ride him a little bit longer, and you see what he did today. And, you know, his base running was good today. I'm fine with that. As far as the other roster moves, you're probably right. It was probably aggressive. And to answer your question, I think that we see in the deal today and just what they have ready, there's a surplus of outfielders, and they're going to have to make a move. Now, whether we think that this is for 2017 or 2018, I think that Mozeliak made that pretty clear that it's probably more for 18, but even in his wording today, it didn't change the way that I looked at the team or the way that I felt they looked at the team. That even at, in June when we were up there, he made it clear, like, their goal may be what makes them better in 18 and beyond, not necessarily this year. And I'm also in the belief that there's some moves they make this year that some may consider selling that I think will make them better. So I think there's a surplus of outfielders that are going to have to move at some point, and I think it will be in the next week or so. I don't know. Are you going to showcase that Grichuk's healthy? I mean, I think that's probably what it is. I think Bader's probably one of the other ones on the market too, and it could go with several different directions. The only question that I was glad to have Duke back, but that also leads to more surplus. I'm not so sure you can have four lefties in that bullpen. I think that I think there will have to be some moves made there as well. But I had made a comment, and I kind of regretted it after I said this, that I was kind of irritated that Sierra went down whenever Grichuk came back, because I thought, in my eyes, Voit and Martinez kind of share that same roster spot of having a guy that, Voit's not going to play the outfield, but, Martinez can play a little bit of first base and be the pinch hitter, but I figured that's what they felt they had in Voit. And I kind of felt like they had that same roster spot, but on the other hand, I thought that Sierra had a skill set that they've been lacking for a year and a half, and I thought that he would be good to keep on the roster. The more I thought about it, after being not upset, but knee jerk was, man, I kind of wish Sierra was up here. I felt like he was not only exposed at the plate when he was here, he did hit, he did slash. Why I say that, because he didn't hit with a ton of authority, which we know that needs to develop. I thought that the game he lost control of the game a couple times in the outfield as well. Made a couple of weird throws, kind of forced a couple things to happen, and I thought, you know what? I think they do him a disservice. He's got a full another month, month and 2 weeks of minor league baseball to play. The role that I want out of him ultimately will be in September, where he could be a defensive replacement, he can get the spot starts, and he can be that big pinch runner when you need that run to score. And, a lot of guys have started that way. Gerard Dyson started that way. Lorenzo Cain, for the most part, kind of came up that way. Some outfielders that I highly respect. And I think that's how he's ultimately going to be used. I kind of thought it was selfish for him to be sitting here and maybe to get one appearance per game, if that, and that's it, counting on Matheny to use it correctly for him to be up. Like I said, my knee-jerk reaction was I kind of hate that he was going down, but when you look at it, it's fair to him and probably fair to the team that he did go down. So, and that even leads more into the surplus of outfielder issues. So it just seems like there's a log jam, and I just have the feeling that they're going to make some sort of move, and I think it may be significant.
It feels like it. I mean, I put out on a tweet today, you look, if nothing changes between now and spring training of 2018, you have Stephen Piscotty, Dexter Fowler, Tommy Pham, Aroldis Garcia, Tyler O'Neill, Harrison Bader, Magnieri Sierra, all of those guys. That's seven outfielders that could start in the major leagues next year.
Yeah, and not to cut you off, but you just named all those guys just now. And if you think about it, last week, I know we did a heavy minor league report. Kyle talked more about a Rosarena than any of those outfielders that you just mentioned.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you've got Rosarena and Mercado that are probably at least another year or so away.
Yeah.
Assuming you buy into Mercado's resurgence, which I think Kyle does, and I don't have any reason to doubt it. But anyway, sure. I mean, there are some others down there. I mean, those guys are a couple years away. And again, you still have to factor that in. But I'm just talking about just
immediate. Okay, that makes sense.
Just
sorry.
Next year, just 18. And who knows? I mean, Arizarena is in Springfield. I mean, in theory, I mean, it's not unheard of. A good spring training would put him into that mix. But you've got so many guys, you have to clear out some. And, you know, I don't know that it's going to happen this week. I think you can make a deal with some of those and still turn around and make another deal with some more of them.
Sure.
You know, and I've, you know, I've kind of thought about, hey, maybe you trade some to the Orioles for Zach Britton and see if you can seal this end of this bullpen up. Because, I mean, at 3.5 games, I think you got to look at this getting into October, because I really don't think, I mean, anything can happen, but I really don't think that whoever comes out of the National League Central is likely to be there very long in October, because of the way that the Dodgers are playing and the way you've got to run into the Nationals. You know, you may even have the Rockies or the Diamondbacks. I just, you know, I don't see a NL Central team being in the World Series. Maybe it happens, maybe it doesn't. But you could get a Zach Britton, and at 3.5 games, sealing the back of the bullpen could be enough with this roster to make you get that push. And then you can spend the offseason going after the big bat. I don't know. What do you think? Do they have to go get the big bat now?
I don't think so. All of us want to see that, but just like we talked about last week, the big bat that we're talking about that they may need is, A, going to be the Albatross contract, which we'll get into in a little bit. But I don't think, as far as trade, I mean, the guys I'm thinking are, you know, Machado, who a lot of people would argue that is not a bat that would help them at the level that they need right now. But I would disagree with that. You know, that's one of those. Unless Orioles change their tune, that's not going to happen. Arenado, that's definitely not going to happen. You know, that ilk that I think they need. Now, the Stanton deal, I do think there's a little bit of smoke on this. I think that they're probably, if they're talking to them, I feel like the ball club, that the Cardinals are trying to cover their back on the contract issue. They know that they can take on money, but they don't want to be paying that amount on a 37-year-old player. I think that there's something that may be involved in that before this gets pulled now. But that being said, that's a lot of stuff to work through, and that would probably be an off-season type situation to do it. You know, I agree with that. I mean, I think that you could probably roll out the lineup that you have now, which isn't terrible, and see what you can do if you can seal up the back end of that bullpen. I think they'll probably go find a veteran bat, just because I think you have to find yourself a little bit of insurance at shortstop right now. I know it's hard to see that after he gets a big hit, but if you look through the extended numbers in the second half, the Young's hit for some power and he's driven some runs in, but he strikes out a whole lot too. And he up until today, I kind of worried about the playing time. I think they're going to roll with it, but it wouldn't surprise me if they find some kind of stopgap on that, you know, just to kind of cover their back. But I kind of agree with what you're saying. I think if you can shore up the back end of that pen, you're right. You may be right in the thick of it, because that would have been essentially two more wins right now that they would have just by not blowing those. Well, three, two in Pittsburgh and one in New York that you would have right now if you had somebody that could close the door on those type of situations. And then as far as getting into a playoff scenario, I completely agree with you that they're nowhere near the talent level the Dodgers have or the Nationals have. But you do have Carlos. And if Martinez is good, he's as good as any starter that those two have. He's right below a Scherzer and he's right below a Kershaw. And you just never know. You steal a game and you just never know. We've seen bad Cardinals teams win. They also had Pujols in the middle of it. You know, so I know it's easy to say, but yeah, I think they're still in striking distance, and it's hard to believe, because I keep writing them off after certain series, and then the teams that they're trailing get into the same rut and can't get out and can't get out of a series. I mean, Milwaukee, what, that's 5 in a row, isn't it, that they lost tonight?
Six
in a row, and I mean that's one of those on a young team. Now they're really in trouble, because now they've got to decide, okay, we've lost six in a row. We've got the deadline in a week. Are we going to go for this, or are we just going to ride out and see what they have? They're in a tough situation, so the pressure is going to ratchet up on them quite a bit. I think the Cubs are ready for that just because of they're the Cubs and they've dealt with it for 100 years and then they finally won one last year. That's why Pittsburgh worries me so much, because there's a little bit of last stand type attitude that Pittsburgh has. And they concern me probably more in the division than anyone right now, and I didn't think I would say that a week ago.
They definitely are playing very much better. It could be that they're peaking early, but it's enough. I mean, they could go out and get a piece that'll help them as well. I tell you, though, your bat may come from Memphis at shortstop. I'm just pulling it up, and Alamedes Diaz, who, as you told me earlier this week, was out for a few days with a family situation, back tonight, two hits tonight. That means in three of his last four games, he's got two hits. The power's not there. I mean, he hasn't hit a home run. He's only hit one home run down in Memphis. But the average is up to 240 after being down as low as 170. You know, and give him another week. If it looks like he's coming around, it wouldn't be surprising to see the Cardinals bring him back up and some sort of timeshare issue with DeJong when whoever's hot gets to play.
Mm-hmm.
I agree that they probably need some insurance at short. I don't know if that's it. I don't know, because I don't know that there's anybody out there. And getting another veteran bat anywhere else, you know, the problem with getting a bench bat is that Mike Matheny won't give up 13 pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't have much room on that bench. I mean, you're going to have to carry Kelly. I mean, who else you got? You got Voit, who you could sit down if you don't think he's going to be ready. If you get somebody else, you could send him down without much trouble, I think. You know, you could cut Greg Garcia, but you got to make sure you've got another, you know, Alamedes Diaz is probably coming up if you cut Greg Garcia. I don't know who the other bench. Oh, Jose Martinez is your other bench bat, I guess. But, you know, you're going to have to replace somebody in there. And not saying that they can't be replaced, but, you know, are the Cardinals going to do that? And they'd be better off if they could replace a pitcher. But because they're not going to play. I mean, those the bats that the Cardinals have right now in their lineup, it's kind of the curse of being good. Because they're good. They're not great. They're not terrible. They're just good enough that it's difficult to replace them. You know what I'm saying?
No, I agree.
You know, do you really want to replace Wong? Probably not. Do you really want to replace Jerko? No. You can't replace Carpenter. You don't really want to do that. The outfield, we've talked about the outfield. There's plenty of bats there. You know, where do you go without making a transitional, you know, fundamentally changing move? I don't know what you can do with this, you know, lineup.
True, yeah, they've painted themselves in a corner. And I felt like you and I have had this conversation since that first road trip of the season. I remember having it after that weekend, you know, in New York, where they just didn't look very good. Mm-hmm. And you and I both said that. They're just like, you know, where are you going to improve? I mean, at this point in the season, third base started out that was the sure sign of position. You have a glaring weakness right there. That's where you're going to have to upgrade. Well, that slowly changed to corner outfield, to where it's like, oh my gosh, left field's terrible. Gritchick, he strikes out. He's going to, you know, he's got to sit down. You're going to have to upgrade there. Then it turns into Piscotty a little bit. You know, that's, he's been one of their worst players. You know, he keeps running him out there. He's hitting in the three hole. He shouldn't be. It's killing the lineup. Then ultimately it gets to shortstop, to where it's like, Diaz is terrible. Yeah, we're going to have to upgrade right there. Well, they found stop gaps at all those positions, so I really don't know, you know, what you're going to do, because some of these guys seem to be the ones that are going to be the long-term solutions, and not necessarily the corner outfield, but as we've talked about already, they have the replacements in place. That just leads me to believe more that something's brewing, that they're going to make some kind of move, and not, like I said, it may not necessarily help much this year, but there's just surplus all over the field. And it's funny the way that you worded it, to where you said not great but good. I had this conversation with a friend of mine this very week. I said they're in a worse situation than good in the fact that they're not bad. I think not bad is probably the worst situation you can be in baseball. You probably want to be in, you want to be good or you want to be bad. You don't want to be in the middle, because now they don't know what direction they are going to go. And, you know, that's, you know, these trades kind of indicate that they don't, I don't think they have much intention of trading any of the pitching. I think it'll be the surplus outfield that they move, and which leads, you know, there's a little bit of clarity in the fact that these are the surplus spots that they're going to need to move. Now it's just curious to see how they do it and piece it all together, or how much of this stale clubhouse that I think we all realize is the situation, how much is that going to get shaken up?
Yeah, I mean, like I say, it'd be one thing if Jose Martinez was starting regularly in the outfield, and then you could say, okay, let's go get an outfielder, because that's an easy fix. But you know, right now there isn't that easy fix. Either the players are doing well, or the players are under contract and not going anywhere. I mean, you know, and so you're going to have to play these guys. I don't know. I think huge moves can happen at the deadline, but I think a lot of those are better in the off season.
Sure.
Because it's just easier to work on the fly. That being said, I gotta say, there's been more and more talk about Giancarlo Stanton this week.
I agree. I the term, not to cut you off, I apologize. The term that I use is there's definitely smoke, where I just didn't think that would be the case. I think there are more things going on than we realize. Gould deadpans it, says there's not. He said they're never going to take on that contract. He's a great source. I just don't know if I believe him on this one.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we can use it when we want to. I guess it helps. But, you know, Mo told us that the mainstream media, you know, they have it right sometimes, and they don't. They're off a lot as well. This may be one of the times that Derek's right. It may be one of the times he's wrong. I do think that if a trade doesn't happen this time, I think majority of the issue is going to be on Miami's side. You know, Miami is continuing to say they're not going to make this trade with this ownership issue in flux, and I can believe that. I will also say, though, I mean, Miami's had scouts at Springfield, or Memphis. Mm-hmm. Memphis, I guess, wasn't it? Because they scouted Dakota Hudson, and they scouted Austin Gomber. You know, that could be that they're getting, you know, just knowing stuff for the offseason. But it kind of feels weird that they do it right now. You know what I'm saying? So maybe something will happen out of all that. I don't know. But I would be, you know, Joe Mozeliak said today on the pregame, and I gotta say, Joe Mozeliak sits down with Cat on the Fox with Jim Hayes. Mm-hmm. Every time he sits there, and they're on that, you know, they're sitting there on the field wherever they're at, whether today it was at Wrigley Field. I swear, John Mozeliak is always looking for somebody in the crowd while he's talking to Jim Hayes. He sits there and he's looking around. Then hardly ever just kind of looks at Jim, and that's probably Mo's way of, you know, collecting his thoughts, deciding what he wants to say and what he doesn't want to say. But it's just kind of funny because he always seems to be, you know, he's answering the question, but he's not looking at Jim Hayes very much. But Mo said that there would be activity. He felt like there would be activity. They were fairly confident that there would be activity around the deadline. Now, again, and I don't think people factor this in enough, and that's why I'm repeating this, it takes two teams.
Mm-hmm.
And the Cardinals can do everything in their power to make a deal, but if the other side doesn't sign off on it, it doesn't happen. And I think that's something we don't focus on enough. We just, and because the Cardinals aren't going to come out and say, well, you know, we offered Miami X, Y, and Z, but they didn't want to take it. You know, they're not going to do that. And so we come along after the trade deadline and say, well, you know, they couldn't get rid of those prospects, or, you know, they knew they had to do something. They didn't bother doing it because they're happy with their money. And I don't think that's always the case. I really don't think it's often the case. I think that they try to do stuff. Now, there are times where they overvalue their prospects, or they just can't make a deal. I'm not as worried about them. You know, I'm not one that thinks ownership is trying to squeeze every last dollar out of this club. But, you know, I don't think we factor in that enough. And I think, especially right now, I think just given the feel for it, if the Cardinals could make a deal for Stanton, they would. Just, if nothing else, to show this team that things are going to be different, or show the fan base that things are going to be different. Because I do think, and some people have pointed out, if you don't make a move here, you have to do something in the offseason. And if you don't do something in the offseason, those ticket sales are not going to be nearly as strong.
Oh, yeah. And I saw where, and this could go into a bunch of factors too, that they were one of the organizations that have seen a sharp decline in viewership this year. Mm-hmm. And I think that maybe just due to apathy, just because I think that people are tired of just the same old, same old. And it kind of stinks to say that, but I felt like this shift of this group that's running out right now outside of really Fowler and, you know, some of the guys that are coming up. Let's just say the group that started the season. I felt like this wave really started to show the true colors in the second half of 15. I understand they won 100 games, but they weren't as good as Chicago in the first round of that series. After winning 100 games, I felt like they kind of pushed to the limit. They won the games and they just weren't as good. Well, last year I felt like they were stuck in neutral all year, and it seemed like it's kind of been this way, the same way this year. But Memphis and the prospects have been the ones that have kind of pulled them out of it a little bit. So you and I talked about this all year, and we talked about it last offseason. I feel like, and I think that you kind of feel the same way, that they're primed to make a move. And we both thought that, hey, if they can get through this year, be competitive, I think they're really going to get in the middle of the Machado deal. And I know a lot of people that have kind of linked them just because they know the Cardinals have money and they know that there's going to be a spot open for a bat like that. Well, at this rate, I'm not so sure you can wait a whole nother year and maybe two to do that. I think you need to pull the trigger on something. And the reason I think Stanton makes so much sense, where the money people are going to say it doesn't make sense, you may get him for very little prospects. It's not going to hurt the one asset that they've had issues giving away, and that's their prospects that they believe in. I just think that there's probably conversations going on right now, and it may have already been a, hey, this is all we can do, that they've said this to Miami, and Miami may have come back and say, well, we can't do it, and it may be dead. But at some point, whether that be now, next week, or they had it 2 weeks ago, I think conversations have been had between the organizations to see how can we limit our liability on the money and what would it take to get him. I think that those conversations have been had because it almost just seems too perfect. And why I say it may be happening now and in the future, you see his name brought up in the ancillary talk of someone getting traded right now. It's not. You hear Yelich and Ozuna, and they're just like, oh, yeah, there's the albatross of Stanton, but no one's going to take that contract. Which tells me if anything's going on behind closed doors with Miami and St. Louis, it's not getting out. You know, how many organizations, how many trades do you see made where the organization announces them? And I understand it was a prospect-for-prospect trade today, but the Cardinals news never slips out.
No, Cardinals news.
And that makes me wonder if there's not something going on. You know, that's just kind of what I'm thinking. I think there's, like I said, I may be way off base on this. The conversations may have been had 2 weeks ago. They may be going on right now, or they may go on next week. But I think that it's going to occur or has occurred.
Yeah, and the only downside, I think, also is that the Cardinals seem to have, and again, like you said, they don't usually tell us what's going on. And they're really quiet about, you know, they've done a good job overall about making sure nobody leaks on stuff. But it seems that they have focused more on Ozuna and Yelich. And those are guys that, if I'm Miami's new ownership, or whoever it is, I'm not getting rid of, because they're still under control. They've got enough leverage there to, you can turn them into the face of the franchise. It doesn't make much sense to get rid of those guys. Stanton, there's a definite argument to do. I will say, I won't reference it because I've Sean Connors, who's 2x07 on Twitter, made a point of this. He drug it up. He's the one that tweeted out that the Cardinals, you know, ratings were down. But he also followed that up, and he said afterwards, he said, I'm pretty sure the first tweet will get a whole lot more play than the second, so I just wanted to point this out. The same article said the ratings for the Royals are down 37%. And the down and the Cubs are down 17%.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, if the Cubs are down, it's not, you know, surprising anybody was. You know, they're down. The Cardinals are down 12 this time, 19 last year. But part of that is also they were really, really high to start with. I do think that there's some issue there. And the Cardinals have, remember, they have equity in Fox Sports Northwest with this new deal. So they're going to want those ratings up. It's not like they can say, okay, we've locked in this billion-dollar contract, now we don't have to worry about it.
Yeah,
there's still an incentive for them to put a good product out there. So I don't know. I do think something's going to happen this week. I don't know that it's going to be the big thing that everybody thinks it's going to. And it may also depend. I mean, if the Cardinals come out and win, well, let's say they win the next two games. You know, if they win Saturday and they win Sunday, they're a half a game behind the Cubs. You know, no matter where they're at, they're half game behind the Cubs. You know, they're within shouting distance of Pittsburgh and Milwaukee, no matter how all that shakes out. They could, you know, they could be just right there at first place. And that makes maybe that makes a difference. Because, you know, a lot of times we've talked this year, it's like, you know, how can you get excited about this team when they're under 500, when they're 4 or 5.5 games back? Why do you sell? Why do you invest in this team? But when you get to 3.5 out in the end of July, no matter how bad, you know, the fact that you're under 500, it's really difficult not to. Now, I'm still of the opinion, and I don't know what the Cardinals are, but I'm still of the opinion that you go ahead and sell Lance Lynn because you can make up that difference. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree.
Get something for him. And, you know, they were never gonna do a major overhaul anyway, I don't think. But it really does change the equation. Now, if they lose the next 2 days and they fall, you know, 4.5 behind the Cubs, maybe staying 5 or so behind the Brewers or whatever it may be, then maybe that's a little easier to start that. I think right now, it's kind of like we said about a while ago, they're kind of stuck. You know, they're not bad enough to sell. They're not good enough to buy. You know, they're getting a little bit closer to that good enough to buy, but, you know, they're still under 500. They're kind of in that no man's land of what do you do?
Yeah, and that's everything that you said right there, I completely agree with. And it's one of those to where that it even builds me up a little bit more to think, okay, well, what this may need is a lackey type trade to shake up the clubhouse and see how well they can play to run out the string. You know, it may be something like that, but it's obviously something needs to be done. I don't know how to say it. It's one of those. It's almost. I clamor on both sides because they've given me no reason to believe that they can sustain anything. You know what I mean? Play wise, that they'll play well for a week, poorly for a week. You know, kick themselves for a week, and then, you know, pitch poorly for a week, and you know, the time just ran out for that. So I wish there was something to kind of shake up the culture, and it kind of seems like that was what was mentioned today in the Mozeliak press conference. Mm-hmm. So you know, I don't know. I still hold out hope that they do something to help out this year. Just so like we've talked about on the round table panel around the break, I just don't want them to completely ruin the summer.
Yeah, and excuse me. There's going to be some of that. I mean, I think that no matter what happens, we saw. Well, we've seen, you know, Carson Kelly's going to be up, and it doesn't seem like there's a very good likelihood that he's going back down. You know, you've got some other guys, you know, you probably can see Sierra again. You're probably going to see Voit and DeJong play a lot. You know, even if nothing happens, and even if they start to slip, there are some young guys that we might get to start seeing that will at least make it interesting to watch, even if they're not winning games. Now, you're right. I think this comments from John Mozeliak today are pretty interesting. And I will say, some people are saying, why are we hearing from Mo? This transition is going to take some time, in my opinion. You know, Gersh has said, you know, if Mo's got a good relationship with the team, he's going to take the lead for a while. You know, if they don't really know, then I will. So I said it was like 2/3 to 1/3 that Mo's going to probably be leading. But this is a group effort, and it has been for a while. But we're just, I mean, Mo's, you're not going to see this change overnight, especially in the middle of a season. And Mo says, hey, look, does the culture need to be changed? You're right. He made some points about Trevor Rosenthal not covering the base. I mean, and he said, basically, we're tired of watching that because we've seen it all year long.
Yeah, it was funny. And he said, we're, and he actually said, Mr. DeWitt is tired of watching that. So I was thinking, well, I think it's reached its fever pitch of things that are probably going to get done if that kind of comment was made. I feel bad for Rosenthal, and then I don't in the same breath, because I felt like they really pointed the finger at him today. So that leads me to believe, though, that they said that this isn't the first time he's done that, and this isn't the first time this back that someone hadn't covered it. And then somebody actually kind of covered the back and said, well, Lynn didn't at some point, but, you know, it didn't come back and wasn't as bad. Well, even when they went to Matheny said something about Rosenthal. And it kind of goes back to what you and I may have talked about. It wouldn't shock me if Rosenthal got traded. You know, if that's not the shakeup, like, this isn't how this is going to work, you know, type situation. So I don't know. My mind is always spinning in these type situations, because you just think, okay, I would do it this way. I obviously don't run the ball club. I'm curious to see how they do it, because I think we know enough about how their thought processes work, how they're going to do some things. There are going to be some fan favorites in that clubhouse that are not with them soon. Yeah. And you just wonder how high that's going to go.
Again, at times, and in some organizations, if people start talking about Rosenthal like they did, that might be a way of easing him out the door, or at least getting people adjusted to when that trade gets made. I don't know that that's the case here, but I don't know. I hadn't seen all of Mo's comments until I'm reading the article right now as we're going over this. And you're right. They were more blunt than I expected. I mean, you look at this and you say, you know, he says, when you look at a group right now and you talk about attitude and culture, you pointed to a game like yesterday. Is everybody okay with that? Are those the kind of mistakes that are just going to be like, eh? And then it's like, get your paycheck and go home. And to me, that's a very scary place to be, because if that's where the mindset is. Because it's certainly not mine. Some of this responsibility has to fall on the responsibility of the player, right? I'm the last person to sit in front of you guys and say we have this all figured out, because clearly we don't. But I have been doing it long enough to know that accountability has to be across the board. I feel like I'm not going to make excuses for people or players. Everybody points the finger upstairs to try and find the solution or the move. Well, maybe 25 players need to look in the mirror. You know, and there's, you know, he looks like he's blaming the players more than anything right now, and that's fair. I think right now, you know, look, they got to do something, and we've said this all year long. It's the problem, and if they're not going to do it, then maybe they don't need to be there.
Yeah, I agree. And just like we had talked about, you know, that's something doesn't necessarily, to me, have to be outside of the organization for me to stay engaged. You know, like I said, if they're not going to go out and make a move to improve, well, if we're going to play 500 baseball, I would rather it be with your Voits, your DeYoungs. Let's figure out what these guys have. Let them have their chance. Well, I feel like the other guys have done that. It's starting to integrating them a little bit more. So I think we may be at that point. But now I'm greedy. Now I'm thinking, okay, you're not as far out as I thought they would be when they made the decision to do that. If there needs to be a roster shakeup, it's not necessarily going to be Vader at this point. It's not going to be, you know, not even going to throw anybody. I say it's not even going to be a Garcia or anybody that comes in at this point. It may need to be from outside of the organization. You know, if they felt like these guys were ready to contribute, they'd be up. You see, they've done it with Voit. They've done it with DeYoung. They've done it with Kelly now. So it may be time for some new blood to go out and get somebody. So, and I think all the signs are pointing to that happening.
It feels like it. Again, it's just, I don't know. I also don't know, you're probably laughing at the same thing I'm looking at, because Jaime Garcia just hit a grand slam.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was watching.
Against the Dodgers. And put
I meant to say something before I went on that rant, because I read it right while you were talking. I was like, that's interesting.
Garcia. Braves are probably going to, they're going to win again tonight. They're up, like I said, after that, they're up 9-0. That's going to win at least 2 of 3 against the Dodgers, who couldn't be beaten for a while, which is just pretty much shows you, you know, what baseball's like, I think. All right, well, I think we've, you know, again, a lot of this roster stuff is still very interesting. I don't know where we're going to go with it, but it does feel like something is working toward happening, and maybe we'll find out soon enough. We don't have a minors report this week. Kyle's week got away from him, and of course, it would have maybe been nice to hear his opinions on Tyler O'Dell, but maybe we'll do that next week. Maybe we'll have a lot more other prospects to talk to.
Well, he was. I think anybody that listens to us probably follows him as well, but I know that he was very convinced that that it was a good move. And I think the Twitterverse kind of thought that it was a fleecing. You know, I liked Marco Gonzalez, but if everybody seems to think so, then I'm pretty much on board with it.
Yeah, I will say, we didn't really get a chance to talk as much about that part, so let's do that before we transition into our last segment. It is a little bit interesting to see the Cardinals make a deal that everybody seems to think went well for them. You know, Marco Gonzalez is a guy that we have seen, and I think a guy that has some potential to be maybe a mid-level, back of the rotation starter, a guy that could help Seattle as much as they're needing help right now, even though he's going to start out in AAA. But that being said, you know, to get a guy with some really tough, really big power, a guy that, you know, is young. I mean, again, the Cardinals are getting a guy that just now, last month, turned 22. And he's ready knocking on the door of the major leagues. It just doesn't feel like we get that much. You know, we saw Stephen Piscotty come up, but I think he was, 24 when he made his debut. You got like Luke Boyd, who's 26 when he makes his. You know, I don't know that even at best we could expect O'Neill to be, you know, an all-star, but maybe. He's not going to be a face of baseball or anything like that. But, you know, he has some potential to be a very above average major league player, and I think that's probably more than you would get out of Marco Gonzalez.
Yeah, no, I completely agree, and it's just like we had talked a little bit in the pre-show was, you know, he had kind of ran his course. You know, injuries kind of derailed him, but he didn't have he wouldn't have had any options next year if he was to make the big league ball club He has one option left, essentially. So he would have been tough. Didn't fit into their plans. You know, you and I talked about this even before the season started. I had heard that they were willing and ready to move him to the pen anyway, you know, even before the season started. And I heard that a couple years ago, that he profiles out better in the bullpen. And I would have liked to have seen that. But it seems like they've got a great return on that. And And you're right, you know, Kyle or John or those guys would have known a lot more about O'Neill than I did. But even looking, I recognize the name from the WBC team, and I go, you know what, let me look at that. So when I saw the pipeline that he was 2 in the preseason, then I was a little surprised. I was thinking, well, wait a second, you're bringing in somebody's top-rated outfield prospect for a guy that had kind of run his course here, and that was before I had even seen the Mosaic quotes. So I thought it was interesting, and there's a part of you that kind of feels bad for Seattle a little bit because, you know, Mosaic never gives up on a guy early. Most of his trades, that they've usually peaked at where they're going to be. So it'll be interesting to see how this trade turns out. And you know, I thought that there was kind of a clue when we were there for the Q&A that day. He made it clear that they were looking for a type 3-4 middle of the order back because he just did not feel there was any in the organization. And, I mean, that's how this guy would profile.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big deal. And like you said, I mean, we talk about the outfield situation. But starting pitching is getting maybe not quite to that level because you need 5 starters. But it's close. There's a lot of different options. I mean, again, we're talking about Lance Lynn probably not returning one way or another. But you still have the four starters from this year, plus Alex Reyes, plus Luke Weaver, plus Jack Flaherty, Sandy Alcantara, who may wind up in the bullpen, but it's possibilities soon. You know, Tyler Lyons, if he's still around next year. Marco Gonzalez fit into that discussion, but with no options next year, and that's a lot of people to try to beat out for that last spot, and a bullpen that doesn't, you know, there's already four lefties in it, and granted, Duke won't be around next year, and we don't know if any of the others will either, but still, it, like you said, Mo said he just didn't fit into the future plans, and you might as well get something for him now, and they did a very good job. Heck, Mo was the one out here talking about this, but I don't know, I assume he pulled the trigger, I don't know, maybe this was a Gersh move that Mo signed off on, I don't know, but it's the first trade of the Gersh era, whoever may have done it. And at least in the first bit, we didn't get taken, and that's nice.
I know, it's exciting. I mean, my excitement kind of comes from the fact that it's like, wait a second, another outfielder? Mm-hmm. That sure seems like surplus, and that sure seems like there's going to be another deal made. You know, and that's, some water had been poured on that, but I still think something's happening.
I think so. Like I said, and I think maybe we've talked long enough, I can't remember if I did it before the show, during the show, some other time. I don't know. I just ramble. I don't listen to myself. but, you know, I wrote this morning. I wasn't sure if O'Neill, when we got him, if it was to increase a package for somebody else, like a Stanton or like a, say, Manny Machado, who's not really available, supposedly, but let's just pretend. Or if it was to, you know, make a guy like Harrison Bader a little bit easier to get rid of. But you're right, it just didn't feel like they were getting an outfielder because they needed an outfielder. There's plenty of those. There seems to be, I mean, in some degree, it's, you know, the Cardinal organization's always been about getting the best talent, but especially when you get to AAA, you got to start looking at what positions you need, and they don't need an outfielder. So if they're getting one, it really, you think that there's at least some other plans, other irons in the fire,
mm-hmm.
that may come around. All right, well, let's go ahead and then let's do this last little segment called Swinging Away.
Tying run at second base. In the air to right center. This game is tied. Going to third is Pujols, and it's 9-9. They just won't go away.
All right. Just a few topics to hit on. Probably, I don't know, just some random topics more than anything. Jose Ortiz in the Post-Dispatch today, and I haven't read the article, I've just seen the topic, but it's relevant. He writes the article that, you know, Cardinal Way has died, and it died under Mike Matheny. We have other national people talking about, you know, what happened to Cardinal baseball. It feels like a lot of things, again, this is a season, there's still a strong possibility this is the second season in a row the Cardinals will miss the playoffs. There's a strong possibility this season will be a sub-500 team. I have never been one to think that the Cardinals are going to fire Mike Matheny. I think that seems to be, and again, I don't believe that Mike Matheny will manage this team the rest of the year. I don't think there's anything that would happen to change that. But I am much more open to the idea that he will not be here for 2018. What do you think?
I agree. Well, I think that I don't think they'll fire Matheny. But I do think there may be a 50-50 type discussion that would be had at some point that, hey, we may have lost control here. Things may have gone off the rails. I think they've taken toys from him now, you know, as far as when they kind of shifted around the coaches a little bit. I don't know. The article was a fire starter today because I thought it was really good. And you could tell that his colleagues thought it was really good because – not only did they all retweet it, they all said a different line out of it. And Gould was funny because he said the exact same line that you did, that the Cardinals had lost their way and they did it under Matheny. It brought up, you know, Heyman made the comment last night about, hey, what happened? Where is this team? You know, who are these guys? Casey Stern was on the Wheeler show today, mm-hmm. and he kind of took a different approach. He did say he wouldn't be surprised if there was a new GM and new manager, which, it, to be honest with you, is ignorant. Because, I mean, what he didn't realize that is that Gersh is now the GM. You know, right, he didn't realize that. And he even got real defensive when someone called him out on Twitter about that today. But it was enough, that article was enough to light those fires that he came on there today and actually defended Matheny a little bit. He said, Matheny may lose his job, but don't get it wrong. It's the roster that's bad. He goes, these guys just aren't that good. I disagreed with a whole lot of what he had to say, but he's kind of clickbaitish anyway, to where that's his job, and he's trying to get everybody on internet radio as well. So that was part of it. But the article was well done, and it really that was one that really pointed fingers, and he did it well written, and it made a good point. Answer your question, I don't know. I mean, that seems aggressive to me. I don't think that he would be fired before next year. They've done things that have surprised me. That would be one that would really surprise me. But I mean, I think there may be a point of it to where, like, even Matheny getting defensive with Derek Gould today about the, you know, where are you going with this? You know, did you read that to where Gould had asked him? Yeah, Gould asked him a question about some of the things that basically the way that Mozeliak had worded this is that there were cracks in the infrastructure, and Gould was asking, like, hey, can you allude to any of this? And whenever he asked the first question, I can't do it off the top of my head, but Matheny's response was, where are you going with this, is what he asked him.
Yeah.
So obviously something happened, you know, or in order to get that defensive, A, you're covering it up, and why would you feel like you need to cover it up? So there were obviously conversations, not necessarily of, hey, this is your last stand type situation, but of, hey, how did things get so out of hand? I'll take my part, but you better take some of yours.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there is a likelihood that there may be a managerial change, but I just don't think it would be a firing.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, agreed. It's not going to happen. It's not going to be a firing during the season. Now, again, this just boils back, and I know a lot of people bring it up. Why do you, especially as Will Leach pointed out again today, it's something that's always gotten him and a lot of people, and it's fairly so, the day after the Cubs win the World Series, you give Matheny a 3-year extension. And, you know, 3 years is a lot of years. I mean, it's one thing to give him a 1-year extension to make sure he's not a lame duck, but, you know, 3 years, and it's an extension that hasn't started yet. You know, it'd be 18, 19, and 20, I think. You know, are you wanting to fire him after this season and just eat that whole contract? It seems like it's a possibility.
No.
And I never, again, we have Blogger Day, Bill DeWitt the third gave Matheny high marks. You know, it seems like Bill DeWitt senior, junior, has always been a fan of Matheny. I think there's a lot of people that still like him, but I also think that the organization has to look at, one, how things are going, and two, how things are perceived, and wonder, is it worth, even if some of that's not accurate, even if some of it's not fair, do you have to tackle that perception by removing Matheny from the equation? Now, I don't know. And maybe they'll do it the roundabout way. Maybe they'll suggest they'll have to fire John Mabry, and Mike Matheny will say, well, if he goes, I go. And they'll say, we'll get you 2 boxes.
Yeah.
I don't know. But
yeah, that's kind of what I meant by that.
Yeah.
Because to me, after Mozeliak had the Friday before we were there, and he did have to fire Maloney or reassign Maloney, right, or, you know, however it is, I kind of had the feeling that meeting got a little more tense than they're letting on, because I think that there may have been some Matheny, like, hey, if you're going to make those moves, let's go ahead and make the whole move. And I think, you know, I think they probably talked themselves off the ledge or whatnot, but I think those conversations have been had, and that may be a Mabry deal to where, you know, that's one where if you're going to fire him, well, you know, I'm not doing it without him type of situation. So, and that's kind of what I meant by there may be a change, but I'm not so sure it'll be a firing. I think DeWitt would do whatever he could to not have to fire Matheny.
That again, that being said, and we probably covered it a little bit at the time when things changed, you know, Michael Gerst would be the one that fired him.
Yeah.
You know, and I always felt like, I mean, yes, there was a lot of support from Bill DeWitt, but I thought there was a lot of support from Mo, and I also felt like, I don't know that Mo approached it this way, but you could see where he wouldn't want to cut loose his first hire, especially one that was as unconventional as it was. He wanted to get rid of Metro. Now, again, Mike Matheny has won here. You can argue about how he's done it. You can argue if it was rostered. You can argue about a lot of things, and that's fair. But you know, he's well over 500 in his managerial career. So there's something there. I think you have to give at least some credit. I know we like to paint Mike Matheny as this bumbling doofus that has no clue what he's doing, and he's no Tony La Russa. I know that, but I just, and again, we question his decisions a lot, and that's fair. I just have problems believing he's that much worse than a regular manager. Now, there's some suggestions that he is at times. You know, we had that study last year that a random generator beat Matheny with bullpen usage. There's some of that. I agree. And I'm not saying that he's the best person for this job, but I also don't think that if Terry Francona or Joe Madden or whoever was managing this team, that it would be, you know, 20 games over 500. I don't think he makes that kind of impact.
Yeah, I agree with that. And you're right. I mean, that's the one thing that gets overlooked is you know, they've been to a World Series under him. You know, they came back in 12, made the NLCS after winning it, and you're up 3-1. And I mean, I know that roster was good, and you're not. But they don't have the hangovers that the Cubs are having right now. You know, and I have to think that has to do with the Matheny a little bit. But you're right. It seems like that he hasn't improved a lot. It seems like they're still sticking with a lot of guys that we think. I think it's easy to see that are better and probably deserve more playing time than some of the guys that are getting. I think that's one of the obvious. But you know, I agree. I mean, there's some things that just completely frustrate me about it. But you know, I feel like we get awful greedy by trying to make a change.
Yeah, you know, that being said, though, again, when national perspective tends to go against you in this organization, which is, I don't think it's necessarily PR focused. Let's don't get me wrong. I don't think that, but I do think there's that pride of the Cardinal way, if you will, of doing things the right way, of doing things as best as possible. And if that gets tarnished, which again, like I was, you know, the article that Ortiz wrote today, you know, take it with whatever it's worth, but that question is being put out there.
Yeah.
I don't know that this organization, that may be a straw that this organization can't handle. But again, it's going to be an off-season move. It's not going to be during the year. I mean, Mozeliak pretty much told us that they really didn't want to make any more mid-season moves. And honestly, firing Matheny and trying to hire somebody else or letting Mike Schilt do it the rest of the year might be just as disruptive as leaving him in place, especially the way things are going. So I don't know that they would want to do that, but... I do think that, you know, if you had told me at the beginning of the year that Mike Matheny could not be there in 2018, I thought I would have told you, no, he's going to be there, but I'm not as sure anymore of that.
Yeah, I think that the conversation has more leverage now than it has at any point.
Yeah, probably so. I'm trying to think other things. A lot of grief, and I know Tara and I talked about this on Gateway to Baseball Heaven. So if you listen to that show, you may not want to listen for a while. But I know a little bit different audiences at times, so I'm going to go ahead and hit it here too. There's a lot of grief out there for Matt Carpenter right now on Twitter. At least a segment of Twitter. And I think it's a decent segment. Don't get me wrong. And there's some basis for the criticism that goes toward Carpenter. That being said, at least in my mind, it feels like it's going over the top. To where Matt Carpenter could hit 6 home runs and have a cure for cancer, and there would still be people that, you know, think he has to be off the team and he's a terrible person. And, you know, I get the criticism of his game. I get the criticisms, like today, where, you know, some were criticizing Rosenthal because he wasn't in a position to do that. I can understand where they're coming from. I don't know that I agree with it, but I get where they're coming from. But I think some of the, you know, almost personal attacks, call it, you know, of the, you know, being a guy that is me first and not team first and all that kind of stuff, I think that's drawing on a lot of facts that aren't in evidence and projecting a lot on a guy that's even now still one of the better hitters on this team, whatever that may be. He's still a huge part of this offense.
Yeah, agreed. He is really. He came up and was a grinder, like a lot of famous Cardinals got their start, you know, and hit his way into, you know, I think, and the numbers show that he's a stud, you know, and he's not a superstar, but yeah, he's very valuable player, and things had really turned on him, and I don't know if it's necessarily the position switch where there's the perception that he wanted to stay in one position. Or if it's the lineup, you know, that he can only hit in one spot. I don't know, but yeah, you're right. The ire that he gets is unjust, you know, a little bit in my eyes, because it's I understand where some of the guys were coming from, but yeah, it's kind of gotten, it's gone overboard a little bit, and I feel like Fowler may be getting some of that soon.
And that seems, like I said, I've always said there's a whipping boy. Almost always,
sure.
In St. Louis, somebody that's going to get blamed one way or the other. And you're right. I mean, if it wasn't Carpenter, it could be Fowler, especially first year in a contract. Now, hopefully, this is, you know, we saw, you know, Jason Hayward struggle, and he did struggle when he went to Chicago too. But there's also people that have struggled in the first year of their contract and then got settled and they go from there. I hope that Dexter Fowler is going to be. That kind of way. I'm hoping that he'll kind of flow into things and get comfortable. But you know, there are people that are already turning on him too. And you know, he's got 4 more years of that contract. You better not get too the knives out just yet for both of those guys, because neither one of them likely going anywhere. I guess Carpenter could, but you know, none likely that they're going to be around for a while.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, it's this could be, you can let, yeah, some people can waste a lot of time griping until the end of these contracts are done. You know, I'd use my energy elsewhere.
it would seem, but you know, I don't know. I've seen it again. I understand, and I've done plenty of criticism, especially of Carpenter's base running this year. But I just think that it's gone a little bit overboard with what he, with, you know, again, he can't do no right. And again, he's kind of in that
boat, yeah,
with Matheny, that, you know, everybody's going to, like I said, everybody assumes that Grendel Grichuk is going to just shun Pham. And, you know, Mike Matheny doesn't like Pham at all. And he's not going to play. Tell me, Pham has played like what? Almost, you know, 90-95% of the game since he came up. You know, Tommy Pham's going to play. I guarantee you, folks, Tommy Pham is going to play, unless they trade him. He's going to play the rest of this year. And, you know, then we'll talk about next year when he's a year older, and we'll see what the, you know, how the lineup and everything looks. But he's going to play. You know, whether Mike Matheny doesn't like him or not, he recognizes he's on a plane. And I hate that. it's gotten to the point where people just seem to have these caricatures of these players. It, you know, again, I'm not saying that I am free of that, because I would probably do the same, but it's like they've got these caricatures of these guys that are extremely developed, and then they poke at those.
Yeah, probably so. And yeah, I agree with you. I mean, that's, I think that the lineup's set, and I think there's a few spots that it's, that's going to be, they're going to play the hot hand. I just don't think that Pham is one of them. I think that he's a mainstay in this lineup for the rest of the season, and I just don't think that needs to be worried about.
Yeah, I would think. All righty. You got anything you want to rant about? I think I've done a good bit of it, so.
No, I think we're good. I think we're getting cleared up a lot of stuff and covered up for not having a minor league report.
Yeah. Without the minor league report, we're sneaking in here a little bit shorter than normal, and hopefully we can do that a little bit more often. Cardinals have the two games with the Cubs this week. They go then back home and play the Rockies and the Diamondbacks. Deadline is, you know, a week from Monday, and it's that time of year. We talked about it a few shows ago about when John Mozeliak makes trades, and I don't know that this will change with Gersh, but they're usually around that 24th, 25th, 26th is about the earliest you can see them, which means that's coming. So we'll see. Continue to, you know, refresh Twitter quite often just to see what kind of
yeah, my phone battery never around the deadline in the winter meetings. My phone battery has no chance.
Yeah, that's about it. So, all right, Alan and I will be with you next week, right up against the deadline. So I'm sure we'll be talking some stuff about this, as well as hopefully talking about whatever moves the Cardinals have made, and who knows, maybe talking about a successful time, and maybe, as I think I've said a number of times lately, a plus 500 team. We will just have to wait and see. So, for Alan, I am Daniel.
Good night.
Shooter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's a winner! That's a winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!